all together on this, we'll help you find the Horcruxes and destroy the Dark Lord Voldemort, so the Wizarding World will be saved. But the most important thing is, Ron is okay with you dating his sister. Harry Potter and his friends have their priorities in order in Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince. One of 5 new movies we'll be viewing this week on Movie Moan at the Movies. I'm the ghost of Gene Siskel.
Also known as Phil G. I'm John Schwartzwelder, reclusive writer on The Simpsons, also known as Jamie Williams. With guests. Our normally quick-witted guest, co-host Ed Hawken would say something witty right now, but yes, apparently he's flabbergasted. So,
but I wasn't asleep at the switch. I was drunk.
Joining us is our good friend Ed. It's also our good friend Lou. Say hello, sir.
Yes, the crazy Canuck from way up north is here as well.
See, we all represent different parts of the world, ladies and gentlemen, and we all fit that stereotype also. So, but we all love movies, and apparently we also watched Harry Potter this weekend with this review coming up. I think Phil and I are about to have it out because I really didn't like it, I must say. There, done. I've washed my hands of it. I didn't like it. I'm shocked. I did not like it.
The glove has been laid down.
Well, I suppose the best thing to do is for me to tell you why it's good, and then you attack me. That's probably, you can't attack first and then defend. It's
totally
best for me to, you know, defend it first.
Here's the thing about that movie,
so
though.
Basically,
it's too much of a setup movie. They spend the whole movie. I mean, I like the fact that the kids are growing up and that we're okay. It's getting darker. The shit's hitting the fan. I like all that. That's great. The ending. Lou said this on Chud. He's absolutely right. It doesn't have the impact it should have. Like we're going into spoilers here, by the way, folks. That's what I like about this podcast. We don't even, you know, cut the bullshit. We get right to the review. We're not even going to say what movie we're talking about. We're just going to assume you know what we're talking about. It's obviously it's Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince, which came out, by the way, folks. No, but like the fact that Dumbledore bites it, I didn't feel the impact it should have had. I felt that Edward's death in the end of Goblet of Fire had a lot more of emotional punch.
Edward? Who the hell's Edward?
That's a kid.
You mean Cedric.
I was close enough, goddammit. The little punk.
The guy with the hair.
The guy with the hair, exactly. The British dude.
Right, right.
It just didn't have, and also it was a repeat. I felt that it literally repeated the same kind of ending structure that of Goblet of Fire, where a character dies, everyone sort of, it's a big impact, everyone reacts, and then the three leads, you know, are looking at the sunset and going, okay, I'll see you next year. And that's pretty much exactly how this one ended also. And I was shocked. I was like, really? We're going to do that again? Like, cause it worked great with Goblet of Fire. I loved how it ended on such a downer. This one, really, like, ugh. Go ahead, Phil. Tell me why I'm wrong.
Well, no, you are right. And look, I will say, first of all,
yes!
I can totally understand why people don't like this movie. I can even understand why people hate it. This thing has plot holes to rival Transformers. There's no doubt about it. This thing is, the more I thought about it, the more holes came up, and we'll gladly talk about those in a bit. But, you know, what you're talking about, Jamie, is, you know, something that, unfortunately, the Harry Potter filmmaking team and David Yates, the director, have been stuck with for this movie and the last movie, Order of the Phoenix. They're stuck with 2 books, which, first of all, the basic plots do not lend themselves very well to the cinematic process of creating an exciting story. It's not like Goblet of Fire. Goblet of Fire is about a wizard tournament.
Well, I think Order of the Phoenix was very exciting. I mean, you get the kids.
It was.
They're coming in together. They're getting their, you know, they're having, you know, the adults won't listen. So, you know what? We're going to do it. We're going to fight back ourselves because they won't listen. That's exciting. There was action in that movie. Something happened.
There were 2 action sequences, one at the beginning and one at the end, and they managed to make interesting things happen in between that, and
right,
that was great. And I think David Yates has a very good skill at making. He's been saddled with 2 very, very hard books to adapt, and he's infused them, in my opinion, with life, with energy, with creativity. I think this film was even better directed than the last one. I thought he had quite a few camera moves in there, weaving in and around the castle and stuff, which reminded me of the stuff that Alfonso Cuarón was doing in the third film, and I love that stuff. It is amazing to me how, you know, Hogwarts Castle, which we are in now for the sixth film, still, to me, still feels fresh and exciting, and they find new ways to shoot it. I know a lot of people, you know, disagree with me on there, and it's a great relief to a lot of people, including Jamie, I'm sure, that in the next movie, it won't even take place at Hogwarts. As I understand it, they get the hell out of it because they're traveling all around the world to find these Horcrux thingy-majigs that they need to destroy Voldemort. So that will be nice.
Have you actually read, now, out of curiosity, have you read the books, Phil? Like, are you a big fan of the book series, or is any...
No, I've never read the books. I'm going to read them.
What about Ed and Lou? Did you guys read the books, or are you just like, eh?
Well, for me, I read the... When I really got into the books after the first movie.
Okay.
Way back in 01. And I read up to all the books up to that point, which is about after the fourth book. I didn't really... Once the fifth book came out, I kind of started losing interest and pretty much haven't really followed it since. I mean, that's kind of been how I've been with the movies. I myself didn't see this latest Harry Potter. I haven't seen any of the Harry Potter movies since the third one.
Wow.
I mean, I know they're good movies and all. It just doesn't grab me like, you know, like it did when it first came out. Even though the first two are the worst of the series, I imagine, because they're the most kid-like. And
in a way, yes.
You know,
there's certainly some darkness in the first two flicks, though. I mean, I don't
that's
think
true.
People... Why do people give Chris Columbus so much shit for those movies? It's like, hey, guess who cast those kids? Chris Columbus. Guess who set up the style and the structure and the tone of the movies that would come to follow? Chris Columbus. Oh, but he sucks. It's like, really? Are we going to do that? Are we going to really shove the dude for that? Like, really?
Well, go ahead. No, it's because they don't like Christopher Columbus in the first place, but...
he's discovered America.
Yeah, well, no. He kind of did, but, you know, but anyway, this isn't a geography podcast. This is... something else entirely. I think the only thing, I mean, I figure I should get around to seeing the fourth one at some point, because I believe David Tennant is in that one, briefly.
We'll get to that in a second.
I haven't had any real drive to see these movies. I mean, I know they're good, but it doesn't grab me like it first did all those years ago, so.
Okay, fair enough. What about you, Lou?
I actually just finished the last book just a couple of days before this movie came out, so... I've always been of the opinion that the movies have never captured the charm of the books, and I haven't seen all the movies. Actually, I watched The Order of Phoenix just before I went and saw The Half-Blood Prince, and while I enjoyed The Order of the Phoenix, and to a certain degree I enjoyed this movie, my same criticisms of the first two movies, I missed The Prisoner of Azkaban. It's the same thing. These movies, there's just so much material in there that they can't, they have to pick and choose out of each book what they want to focus on. Mm-hmm. And because they're picking on different elements for each movie, and I saw that between The Order of the Phoenix and this movie, The Half-Blood Prince, they're leaving out large sections of the book. Characters that have importance, like in one book, are almost absent in the following movie. Like Neville Longbottom has a fairly big part in Order of the Phoenix. In The Half-Blood Prince, he's pretty well invisible. All he does is drinks.
Yeah, he's in the background.
His character has a really good arc, but it's not there. And the seventh movie, I'm really struggling. I don't know how they're going to get two movies out of that, because it has a great beginning. It's got a terrible middle section, which I would call the tent section. And trust me, when we get to that point in the movies, you're going to know what I'm talking about. And then, but then the finale is awesome. I've read all the books. I'm still the more these movies I see, the more I feel that this is a franchise that would have been much better handled as a miniseries.
So you don't think they're going to pull it off with the last movie, in your opinion?
Well, since they basically skipped the battle, or really compressed it to, you know, basically nothing in the Half-Blood Prince, I still think they can really. If they have a good ending in the seventh movie, or the eighth movie, I guess, you know, they could still save it. But based on what I'm seeing so far, the movies are falling far short of the books.
Well, it's also interesting, you know, and I still maintain what everyone is the most curious about with Deathly Hallows is going to be the epilogue. And, you know, whether or not they're going to do it. They say they're going to do it, but I can't, you know, that's going to involve, you know, what I call CGI Botox. You know, you make someone look older or younger. In this case, you know, they're going to use the same actor, supposedly, to make them look in their, I guess they'll be in their early 40s, I guess, but in those, when those scenes in the epilogue, how will audiences react? I mean, we just saw how people laughed their asses off at Patrick Stewart at the end of X-Men Origins, Wolverine, you know. How are they going to react to this? Although, you know, I've seen that it's been handled well. I mean, as people have said, you know, look, two words, you know, as a counterpoint, Benjamin Button. That did it really well, you know, so that's true. We'll see.
On the other hand, that Carla Guigno in Watchmen, the old lady makeup on her.
Oh, that's terrible. Oh, my God.
Watchmen had some of the weirdest old aging makeup I've ever seen in a movie.
It also had, well, I mean, you know, Phil, I disagree with you slightly, sir. You can't get any worse than the Richard Nixon old age makeup than
Watchmen. No,
true,
but that's not aging somebody. That's
well, yeah, it is. His eyes, Richard Nixon. Ah, it's the worst impression I've ever seen. It's terrible. You might as well have gotten, like, you know, you really should have just gotten Harry Shearer in the makeup to play Richard Nixon in that movie. It would have been better, I think.
I think they'll be able to age them pretty easily myself. 20 years, you know, they put on a bit of padding to make them look like they put on weight, just change their hairstyles a bit, maybe a touch of gray. I don't really see that as a big issue.
Okay. Anything else you got to say about the film, Lou? Blue. But we're done with you, Lou. No.
Okay. Bye.
anything else? Any other thoughts on the movie, Phil?
Well, I just want to bottom line it to say that, you know, the reason I love it is that every single moment in this film is character development. It's character moments. It's all stuff that makes you care about the characters, and that's why I'm not worried about Deathly Hallows. It's because even though I know for sure, I mean, the reason I think Order of the Phoenix was and is still the best film is because, as well as, you know, making it tight and interesting, it's about something. It has a theme running through it. It's about whether it's better, you know, when, you know, you've got so much to lose, whether it's best to go it alone or to, you know, be with your friends. And, you know, that really comes to a great head at the end of the film. This one isn't about anything. And the next one, because it's split into two movies, it won't be about anything except, you know, just, you know, ending it. But, you know, it will have a lot of dramatic high points, not to mention the fact that, and I won't give away too much, Damien, but I'm sure it goes without saying, you imagine, the last book is a bloodbath. There's so many characters bite it. I mean, and I wonder how many are actually going to get to, you know, see the light of day on it.
Yeah, so I was wondering how many of them will actually, if they'll even spare some characters' lives. I mean, they might. I wouldn't be surprised if that some characters who are in the books who die don't.
I don't think so.
The fans would go berserk. It has to be, they have to obey the Bible. They have to obey the sacred texts of Rowling. Now,
their Lord and Savior, J.K. Rowling, is going to say otherwise. Go ahead.
It's true. I mean, we haven't talked about the flaws, really. I'll pick up one flaw.
I've already said
the
flaws. I've already said the flaws. You go ahead, sir.
Well, I'll say one thing, and this goes back to what Lou was saying before about things that, you know, have been left out from the books. Here's one thing that should have been put in. In the first movie, we found out what a Philosopher's Stone, or a Sorcerer's Stone if you live in America, was. We found out what the Chamber of Secrets was, who the Prisoner of Azkaban was, what a Goblet of Fire is, what the Order of the Phoenix is. Can somebody please tell me what a Half-Blood Prince is? I thought watching the movie would explain it to me,
apparently,
but it didn't.
Apparently it's Alan Rickman. That's all it is.
Yes, I know who it is, but what is it? What does it mean?
It's a MacGuffin, apparently.
It's one of his parents is a muggle.
Right, okay, why is he a
prince?
That's a good point.
Okay,
so not even J.K. Rowling knows. Well, I can't hold that as a criticism then, if she doesn't even know why he's called a prince.
He's only the writer. Yeah, who wants to hear
I know.
I just created the fucking universe.
It's really clunky, though. The ending.
You better watch who you say that about, sir, because some otter fans might pull every, you know, organ out of your body for saying that, sir.
Yeah, that's one of the things that this adaptation really glosses over, because if you read the book, you really think for most of the book that potion book that he has is really Voldemort's when he was a student. But you don't get that sense at all from the movie.
Yeah. Now, see, those moments were great in the movie, actually. I will say, like, performance-wise, I think they're all great. Particularly, What's the gentleman's name who plays Dumbledore? Has been
Michael Gambit.
Thank you. He is fantastic.
Yeah.
Man,
he is.
Best performance in this, of all of the, in this movie. Everyone's saying Jim Broden, who was great in the movie, to be fair. But man, it's Gambit. He is. You know, he knew. You can just tell by his performance. It's like his character knows. Like, I'm about to croak. I know I'm leading to my death. I know this, and yeah. I just feel that in his whole performance. It's like, God, he's so good in this movie. You feel like, ugh, no more him. Yeah. Oh well, you know,
his opening shot when he put his arm around Harry when all those photographers were taking him shot, that really set his character. For the rest of the movie, you really thought that he had really cared about Harry.
Oh yeah, I mean I like that.
That was a great opening shot.
Yes, it is.
And there's a moment at the end when Harry's in Dumbledore's office alone. Well, and then McGonagall comes in, and then you see a portrait on the wall of Dumbledore sleeping in a chair. And it's so melancholy. Now, I don't quite understand the logic, whether he's a ghost now in the painting or whether it's just a photograph that's kind of moving like a hologram. I really don't understand that, to be honest. But still, it's really, really, really sad.
Does his ghost show back
up? It's like that Yates brings to it.
Does his ghost show back up in the seventh installment?
Kind of.
Okay, I was about to say, that's a yes or no answer. We can spoil it. Look, as I said earlier, like, you know, I didn't say this earlier. I've said this in previous podcasts, but it's like, you know, I know enough of the Potter films, like, I can be surprised. I knew in this one that Dumbledore was going to bite a bullet. Or, not eat a bullet, he ate a wand, I guess, for lack of a better term.
Ate a spell.
I knew that much. So, you know... I know how the next one ends. I know that, you know, everything is right with the world by the end of, you know, at the ending of the final film, but everything else I don't know. Leading up to that point, I don't know.
That's my biggest complaint with this movie, is I didn't really feel much for Dumbledore's demise, and I really thought the staging of the whole fight sequence was terrible. Basically, you're seeing it from Harry's point of view, and he's like a floor below trying to look up through... I don't know what he was looking through, like a hole in the floor or something like that. I didn't buy that at all. I think they really bungled that, but I think it was just a matter of time. They're hitting a time limit, and they had to get to the end of the movie as quickly as they could.
It's the first time during any Harry Potter movie where I've checked my watch. I hate to say that, I really do. That's when you know a movie's too long, and I was just like, it's over yet? He's not dead yet. Are we getting there? You know, I'm sorry. Although, to be fair, I've read some reviews where they said this movie will probably improve once you see the final two, and that's fair.
No excuse.
I'm just saying. Hey, you like the movie. I'm trying to give. I am throwing you a bone.
I will admit its flaws, and I will say it has to stand by itself as much as it can. Yes. It obviously can't recap the whole bloody story, because that would be a 20-minute opening montage or like a Rocky film. But no, it has to stand up, and I will admit its flaws. It's probably, in my mind, it's like the second best right now. I don't think it bungles the exposition as much as Goblet of Fire. Now, I enjoy Goblet of Fire, but they made some big mistakes on that one. I'm still scratching my head to this day about some of the plot points in Goblet of Fire. With this one, it was just at the end. There's a lot of rushing at the end. For example, Jim Broadbent, so integral to the plot, as soon as they get the memory they need, he's gone! Where did he go? I don't know where he is, but I think he deserved a send-off.
Oh, so he doesn't show back up ever again?
No.
Jeez. Wow, that's lazy. Oh, well.
Yeah. What I've been reading on from the boards is a lot of Potter fans are hoping, because they're doing the seventh book and two movies, they're hoping that they're going to pull a lot of these dropped threads and kind of incorporate them into the seventh and eighth movie.
And they could. That's a good point, actually.
Yeah.
Oh, well. We'll see what happens. So, anyway, speaking of fantasy novels, next week is Comic-Con, as you all know. We won't be there, sadly. But The Hobbit will be there. Peter Jackson will be there. So, you know, he's making his first physical appearance, I believe so. Is that correct? He's never been to Comic-Con in person. Is that right, guys? Or does anybody know that?
As far as I know.
I don't think he would be alive if he had.
Yeah, so...
I seriously think he's going to get killed there. I'm worried about him.
Well, that's why he's going to have his armed guards who are going to show up there. You know, don't worry. His goons will, you know, escort anyone who tries to, you know, get anywhere near Peter Jackson next week.
He has cave troll.
That's right. He's got his own trolls.
Witch kings.
But yeah, so they're gonna have a Hobbit panel next week, and there's been some rumors running around that we might in fact get a casting announcement of Bilbo Baggins, or the new Bilbo Baggins, if you will, for the two-part Hobbit film. Now, Peter Jackson told this...
You say it, and the Leonard Nimoy song pops in my head.
Oh, yes.
Now it's stuck there. I'm sorry.
For the rest of the show, we'll be performing that. You good folks. No, so Peter Jackson told Empire Magazine very quickly, that's not true. We're not going to announce anything next week. We just started writing. We're too busy, blah, blah, blah. Lo and behold, this morning some pictures came out from New Zealand. Guess what's happening? They've been working on building the Hobbiton?
Shire.
Yeah. That place where the fucking hobbits live.
Little town,
exactly.
The Shire, Hobbiton, Bag End, Bagshot Row. Honestly. Okay.
Really? That's got that many names. Anyway. They've been reconstructing that area where they shot the Lord of the Rings trilogy. So it sounds like they're a little further along than Mr. Peter Jackson's saying, and makes me wonder if he was lying. Maybe he was telling the truth, but there's some candidates who might be playing Bilbo Baggins, including the aforementioned David Tennant, who is currently Doctor Who, and I believe he's about to resign from the role. Is that correct, gentlemen? Is that right?
He's already said he's giving up the role, which is why they have their replacement already to go, Matt Smith. Okay. I believe he's going to be taking over. They're doing 4 specials this year, and then Matt Smith is supposed to take over in 2010, or basically, I don't know if Jamie ever watched the episodes, but when they have the regenerations, the new Doctor shows up. He shows up the last bit of the last episode, and then they move on to the next one. So he probably would show up this year in the last special, in the last scene.
Okay, that's cool.
By the way, can I say it takes something away from the word special when there are fucking 4 of them in a year? I just want to point that out.
That's true.
It's a bit much.
It's a little bit much. That's a good point, sir. But, I mean, yeah, so Tennant will be making an appearance. He'll also be making his first appearance at Comic-Con. There's been some speculation that maybe he's playing Bilbo. I never heard his name been brought up in the past. The only people who's... I've heard James McAvoy's name's brought up, a lot for Bilbo. And he makes a lot of sense. I could see him doing it. There was another rumor about Daniel Radcliffe, which is just like, come on. Like that's going to happen. Like,
all right, I hope not.
Oh, come on. Like, that's really going to happen. It would be funny, because he'd have a lot of just, kind of reaction at Comic-Con once he walks out. But, I mean, we might not get an announcement. Jackson says we're not. There is going to be a panel. I believe Del Toro might. I don't know if Del Toro is going to be there. He's there all the time, so we always assume he will show up in some form. I don't know. Maybe they will announce The Hobbit next week at Comic-Con, the actor. I don't know. What do you guys think?
As you say it, Jamie, what I want is I want that Comic-Con panel, and I want, on one side of the room, I want Tolkienites, real hardcore Tolkien fans who have problems with the Lord of the Rings films, and then the other side, I want Potter fans, and I want them to announce Daniel Radcliffe, and I want these two guys to just rip up their seats and annihilate each other. I want mass carnage on the floor, and I wish I could be there to see it happen. I don't know, matter, really, as long as it's a good actor. I think McAvoy's the perfect guy, but if it doesn't happen, it's just going to be someone that, it's never occurred to us that it would be. That's
like
usually how
things like, just like Ryan Reynolds last week. I mean, we heard all these names being brought up for Green Lantern, and then Reynolds came pretty much out of left field. No one reported Reynolds whatsoever. People can say, I knew it. It's like, well, you might have known it, but no, you didn't say it out loud, so.
James Marsden for Bilbo.
Yes. Yes.
Don't laugh. He's a versatile actor.
He is a versatile actor.
He is.
We're going to have to get you off the show if you start making fun of James Marsden that.
Well, who should play Bilbo then, Lou?
Oh, Jesus, I don't know. Nathan Fillion, he's my go-to guy.
And if he's not available, then as always, before
Nathan Fillion definitely should have been the Green Lantern, though.
Or Bruce Campbell, as always. Bruce Campbell as Bilbo Baggins.
Bruce Campbell, yeah.
Bruce Campbell's chin could play a character in The Hobbit. Let's be fair. Speaking of British, now that we're off that topic, I got a lot of... it's been a big week for the Brits here. Phil is so excited with this news. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, they're making a Bridget Jones 3. That's right.
Watch your damn mouth! Like Voldemort, this is the movie that should not be... No, look, see, here's the thing. As much as... Look, I think it's another one of those movies, like with Neil and I, that I think the first Bridget Jones we are required by law in this country to see. When immigrants come in to get their visas, they get taken into a room to watch it, and then they get their card, you see. So, and the first one's fine. It's a charming...
It's great, actually. First Bridget Jones is a great movie. That sequel is ass, though. That's a fucking...
It is. I got dragged kicking and screaming to it because I knew it was going to suck, and it does suck. It repeats every beat of the first one. And, of course, you know, we must be optimists. Maybe the third one could be good. You never know. And, to be honest, can I blame them for making it or wanting to make it? Absolutely not. If they do a third Bridget Jones... with what's her name? I've forgotten her damn name.
Renee Zellweger. Yes.
Oh. Thank you very much, Ed. And they put her in the title role again, even if they don't get Colin Firth and Hugh Grant back. And frankly, if they get Hugh Grant back for a third time, then I know it's going to be shit, because I don't see why he would be back again.
Hugh Grant, do you, huh?
No, I do. I love Hugh Grant. And that was the first Bridget Jones was a chance for him to finally, for us to discover that he can play arseholes and different characters. He's great. But, you know, his character... you can't have him in a third one. There's nowhere left to go. He's just going to be doing the same shit again. That's all I'm saying. But if they make a third one and they have the cast back, you know, the chicks are going to see it. And it's going to make money as long as it, you know, doesn't cost the earth. I can't imagine a $200 million Bridget Jones movie.
$150 million. $150 million Bridget Jones movie.
That's what everything costs.
What? But now, how much? I, you know, to be fair though, Phil, half the budget will be put towards making Renee Zellweger fat again. So yeah, that's about right.
It's, you know, it's a hard job.
Hey, she's awesome in that role. I mean, I remember when they announced that she was playing the role, everyone got really pissed off. And like the moment she, you know, like they saw the first like what 2 minutes of the movie, they're like, oh shit, she's Bridget Jones. Oh well, we were wrong. She was great. I mean. Yeah, I just, another one, really? I mean, her career has gone pretty terrible lately, so I can see why she's doing it. I mean, it makes perfect sense why she's, you know, going to put on the pounds for a third time.
It's going to make money, and we're not going to see it.
Yeah, so exactly.
Of course.
Well, yeah, no, Phil's going to, Phil will get dragged kicking and screaming to see it again. I will call that right now. It's going to happen, folks.
I am, as of this moment, cutting off ties with all of my female friends to stop that from happening. That will not happen again. I won't. It's like being deprived of oxygen. The second one was such a waste.
I did get to see the
Star Wars Revenge of the Sith trailer for the first time on the big screen in front of it.
That was like the one high point of that whole movie-going experience was seeing the trailer.
I
have
to say it was, yeah.
Wow, that's bad. I don't know if that says... anyway. Let's see, what else is going on this week?
I saw Moon. Know about Moon?
Yes.
What did you think of Moon, Phil?
Well, I should say, first of all, it's been given, as I expected, a pathetically limited release in the UK. I was coming out of Harry Potter in 3D, the time was 4:35, and I said to myself, I wonder. And I went over to the timetable, and there I saw it, Moon, 4:40. And I said, I'd be crazy not to do this. So I immediately ran back upstairs, got another ticket, and jumped in to see Moon. I have to concur with everything Captain Hocken has said, and thank him very much for pointing it out to me, and for not spoiling any of it. Because this movie is a mindfuck. No point, maybe I'm stupid, I don't know, but at no point did I know where this thing was going. It is one of the best pictures of the year. For a sci-fi fan, it is your obligation to see it, and, you know, I'm sorry guys, but I am not going to tell you anything about it, plot-wise, because you need to see it fresh. I can't imagine I would have enjoyed it five times as much if I knew what the story was exactly was going to be and the plot twists and stuff going in. This movie, it plays games with your mind, man. It makes you see things that aren't there. And it's just a wonderful movie. It is... I've seen movies before that deal with loss of self, loss of purpose in life, where you feel like, you know, your place in the universe has been taken away from you and you don't know where you fit in anymore. And hands down, this is the best example I have ever seen of that kind of story. And maybe there are better examples out there, but of movies that I've seen, this is the best example of that. It really is a story about having your loss of purpose in life just taken away from you in the most amazingly original way you can guys can imagine. And I know that's vague, but I can't spoil any more of it for you. Just bloody see the damn thing.
Okay, so then what, using your own personal rating scale, sir, what would you give it?
Oh, 9, absolutely.
9 out of 10, alright.
9 out of 10.
You heard it, folks. And Ed, now, I don't remember, what was your review, what was your rating for it? Do you remember what it was offhand, sir?
I didn't give a specific number rating. I just said this was something that you had to see, and it was, out of everything else there is out there, it was this and the Hurt Locker that really, really should be seen. And I have to, you know, Phil, what did you think of that opening credit sequence? That was probably right up there with the Watchmen's opening credit sequence. The way they incorporated...
Well, actually, yeah, we can spoil that. The lettering of the titles actually appears on scenery around the moon base. Actually, that kind of reminded me of something I saw in the opening credits of Grand Theft Auto 4. But still, it was very nicely done. I'd never seen it in a film before. I'd just seen it in a video game before.
Cool. The Panic Room. Panic Room comes to mind, actually, when you say that.
Oh.
Yeah. Anyway, go ahead.
I absolutely love the movie, and I thank Ed very much for pointing out to me.
Okay, cool. Since Phil is on a topic of something that's near and dear to his heart, Phil asked to have the floor to talk about something. He wants to thank Paramount Studios for something they announced this week. Sir, the floor is yours on this one. You go ahead.
I won't. Floor's been mine for a while. I keep
that's okay.
In you guys. I do apologize.
No problem. Go ahead.
Basically, Paramount has announced the DVD and Blu-ray specs for the film, the only film of the summer blockbuster season that I actually really actually want to purchase, Star Trek. And, you know, us fans have heard about lots of things which they cut from the movie. We might have read the novelization. We saw little snippets in the trailer of things that were cut out of the movie. We were wondering, where the hell was Eric Banner's character for that 20 years he was waiting for Spock? We heard about Rora Pente scenes. That's a Klingon penal planet for you folks not in the know. We heard that the might actually be Klingons in the movie, but they were cut out. We know Spock's birth out of the movie. Lots of little things. And we wondered, as you often do, okay, what's going to happen here? Either Paramount is going to let us see these deleted scenes in the initial DVD release. They're going to hold them back for an extra special Ultimate Edition just to get a double dip and screw us. Or they're going to release an extended cut of the movie further down the line. And the DVD specs have released that it looks like, I could be wrong because I don't know, but it looks like we're getting all the deleted material. No extended cut. It doesn't need one.
No. Nope.
No double dip down the line.
Well, happen. That could still happen. You know the way these things work out. And it probably will happen. If Trek 2 comes out summer 2011 like they're aiming for, they will re-release the DVD again with maybe like a preview of Trek 2 on, you know.
Oh, sure, yeah.
So they probably
won't like this. It's not like a double D where they're purposely holding back shit you want to see. Like, as I said in my article, and you can read it on the post, folks, they've deliberately held back this alternate ending to Quantum of Solace, which Jamie and I want to see.
Yeah.
Where Bond supposedly kills Mr. White. We haven't seen that yet, but we know that we're going to see it when Bond 23 comes out. We're still waiting for... the Star Wars trilogy, we haven't seen the deleted scenes on that. The Indiana Jones trilogy, they didn't have deleted scenes, but we know they exist. Lots and lots of things. We're still waiting to see deleted scenes. It's one of my favorite things on movies, especially movies that I like.
Older
I want to see what was put out.
Yeah, older movies. Like, you see them now, like, more recent movies, it doesn't have as much context. But, like, older films that we grew up with, oh, man, like, God, the alternate ending to Dawn of the Dead, if it exists, like, which, you know, they say never was shot. If someone had that, oof, I'd love to see that.
And yeah, no one knows. The alternate ending to First Blood, where Rambo...
Which I have seen.
Poe dies, but that's not on the DVD.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, it's on you. Oh, is it? Oh, it's not on my DVD.
Yeah, they double-dipped it.
I got screwed.
You did get screwed. Yeah, they double-dipped it. They double-dipped it, and they tacked on a Stallone solo commentary, which is actually really good.
Oh, good. I've said this before on the show. The first thing I ever saw on YouTube was the alternate ending to Little Shop of Horrors, where the plants take over the world, which is not available on DVD, that alternate ending, because of some very complicated legal...
It was for about 5 minutes, yeah.
And then took it off the shelf. I'm sorry, Ed, I cut you off there. Sorry.
Oh, no, I was just about to say, Stallone, for whatever reason, does very good commentaries.
I know.
Movies are, you know, or something else, but he does pretty good commentaries, I would say.
He's such a smart guy listening to him. And
he is.
I've heard that in a lot of interviews. Like, you know, you make fun of him for his acting, but you talk to this guy, he is fucking whip smart. And I mean, to be fair, I mean, this guy wrote Rocky. I mean, clearly he's, you know, he's smart. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know,
yeah.
I don't think a stupid person could write Rocky. I mean, just saying.
No, yeah. It definitely leads you to the conclusion, at least about Stallone. It's like, had he made different decisions, he probably would have been a very, you know, noteworthy, you know, filmmaker or something like that. Who knows? But, you know, he could have just kind of stuck with easy money. Anyway, enough of that derail there. Might as well...
Not at all. We derail all the time, sir. We all know that. So mostly me.
By the way, I sorry to go back to Potter, but there is one important piece of information which I need to tell you guys, because I don't think some you people know it. I certainly didn't know it going in. You get poor guys in America have to wait until August to see Potter in IMAX 3D because of the Paramount contract to show Transformers all through the month. You lucky guys get to see it, you know, back in IMAX. I know you want to go. Anyway, my condolences. So I just want to point out to you guys, because I didn't know this, only the first 10 minutes are in 3D, and the rest of the time, the other 2 hours and 20 minutes, I'm sitting there like an idiot with these big uncomfortable glasses in my hand, waiting for more 3D, and it never came. And eventually, by the time it got to Dumbledore's death, only then did it sink in. I don't think I'm going to get any more 3D. Man, I'm an idiot.
Well, you say that about go ahead.
I was about to say, newsflash, it's like 3D is not actually worth a damn.
Thank you.
That's not a surprise.
God bless you, sir.
I was going to see an IMAX anyway. The 3D was just a cherry on the top. But still, I mean, the Order of the Phoenix in 3D was very impressive. The whole last 20 minutes, the whole final battle was in 3D. And the opening sequence in this movie, of course, as you can imagine, seeing the Death Eater attack through London and the way they swerve through all the buildings and shit in 3D, it's awesome. It's like a simulator ride.
Well,
kind
I
of
mean...
distracting, but still, it's a lot of fun.
You know, I mean, you talk about the IMAX. I mean, the reports are coming out, the box office this weekend, it really didn't sell through the roof in IMAX. Like, every time a wide release comes out, it's always, it broke the IMAX record. We hear that pretty much every event film that gets an IMAX release, we always hear that. It didn't really happen this week with IMAX. I mean, it made $159 million over the course of its 5-day weekend, as per the estimates. Not so much with IMAX, you know. So what IMAX theaters did get it wasn't particularly packed for it, apparently.
I think we have 3 in this country, or 4. We don't have very many.
Mm. And you had to fight people tooth and nail to get that ticket, didn't you, sir?
Yes, I did. Okay. The ticket machine broke down. The guy had to write it down in pen. My seat number.
That sucks.
Mm. Well, yeah, kinda. It was a close call there.
Ooh, that's terrible. But anyway, better him than me. Let's see, what else going on? In Marvel movie news, Scarlett Johansson, the first picture has been revealed of her as the Black Widow in Iron Man 2.
Oh my god!
I know, I'm just like, okay, she looks... hey, look, Scarlett Johansson looks attractive now. I mean, that's... I have to think for curly redhead, so when I say that, I'm not joking when I say that. You know, okay. Carrying on. You know, I didn't really get all up in arms about that bit of casting, that bit of news. Did you guys care, or, you know?
No, not really.
Okay.
No, but she looks good in the picture.
Yeah, she looks great. Moving on.
Yeah.
But actual news is...
You can barely see the picture. I mean, you can barely see the costume.
Well, what
so
costume?
I don't know what to get excited
I wouldn't really
about.
Say costume, sir. It's, you know, it's tight black leather, which I'm a big fan of on women like her. But, you know, not on me, obviously. You don't want to see that. But, you know, anyway, moving on.
Especially in this heat. Yeah.
Exactly. Oh, man. The heat is so bad down here. People bitch about heat, man. It's 100 degrees, over 100 degrees daily. So when I hear people bitching about the heat, I'm just like, you know, come down here. Then we'll talk. But anyway.
Summer sucks up here. It's like 10 degrees below normal.
Ugh. Yeah. Poor baby. But yep. Actual Marvel news, real Marvel news, is the fact that Natalie Portman is joining the cast of Thor. Nikki Finke actually broke this, like, 4 months ago, I believe she said it. Now it's announced she is going to play the female lead opposite Kirk's father, or AKA Chris Hainsworth, the Thor, and Brian Blessed, and whatever the actor's name is who's playing Loki, whose name escapes me. Portman. I mean, I don't know. Natalie Portman. I thought she was kind of past this phase of you know, big event movies. I thought she kind of got that out of her system with the Star Wars movies. I mean, I'm all for her doing this film, but I'm just like, eh. I'm not particularly excited about the prospects of, you know, her in this movie.
I'm confused about it.
Yeah.
What do you mean?
Because I was under the impression, like, I'm kind of excited that she's playing, the character she's playing is a Jane Foster. Now, the Thor I know is the Thor of the comics when Thor, you know, transformed into Dr. Donald Blake, you know, and his cane, you know, his hammer turned into a cane, and, you know, he had, his girlfriend was Jane Foster, a mortal woman, and, you know, his father, Odin, "Boo, Gordon's alive!" didn't want him playing with, you know, a mortal, and I'm very excited about any scene where Brian Blessed is going to shout at Thor and tell him not to get involved with a mortal woman. "Nay!" he'll say, and stuff.
Wow. Well.
But I thought this movie was going to take place mostly in Asgard, and when he went to Earth, it was going to be in Viking time. I'm sure that's what I heard in the script review I read, and if it's changed, then, I mean, I'm fine with it, but, I mean, I said on the, in my comment on the post, I said, it's not impossible to imagine that she'll just turn up at the very end in a little end credit sting, just like Samuel L. Jackson did at the end of Iron Man, just to say that she'll be in the sequel and she's been signed in a multi-film contract. I know it's really, really out there, but you know me. I'm the guy who comes up with the shit, the weird stuff that no one else will say.
Well, I mean, you know, you could be right, though, sir. I mean, I just, you know, this is going to be the toughest of the Marvel films next to Avengers, in my opinion, and I think that what interests me the most is the director selection of Kenneth Branagh. That's where I'm actually curious to see how, I'm like, okay, Kenneth Branagh's doing this, now I'm interested. Because beforehand, I mean, with Matthew Vaughn, I was just like, eh, whatever. Mm-hmm. Now it's got my attention.
Yeah, expecting a very Shakespearean take on it.
As long as it's not like Clash of the Titans, because that's my fear, the old one, not the new one. I'm sorry. I don't hold
Chris that Hemsworth is a big question mark for me, too. I mean, his little cameo at the beginning of Star Trek was fine, but does this guy have the chops to carry this character? I don't know.
And that's the other thing, Lou. I mean, me and you thought he was great in Star Trek, and so did Phil. A lot of people, though, thought he was terrible in Star Trek. I don't see that, but I mean, so this guy headlining a movie, it'll be interesting. Although, it's ironic, little side note, is one of our writers, Sean Gursky, great guy, great writer, and he was saying that when he saw Star Trek, the moment he saw Chris Hainsworth, and he saw his body type on screen, like you saw a full body shot of him, he literally said, "That's a superhero. He's gonna play a superhero come hell or high water."
He does have the build.
That was Sean's logic. He's like, you know, he's gonna be a superhero, dude. He's an unknown. He's got the build. It's a question of who is he gonna play that hasn't been played yet. And I think Sean told me he thought it was gonna be Captain America, but
that would have been great.
He's kind of half right. I mean, he was close enough there, but props to
but
Sean.
But that's
for
a big part
that.
Of Thor, though. I mean, the guy is a god. So yeah. When he appears on the screen, he better look impressive.
And that's true, though. And the casting director has said in an interview somewhere, she goes, you know, when he came in, he didn't even say anything. They're like, it's him, you know, which is so weird. It's like, okay, did he? I'm assuming he read for the part also, but okay, we'll see what happens.
Or pumped up.
Yeah, exactly. speaking of other director news, news has come out this week that it looks like, although it's not official, this hasn't been said, it looks like Darren Aronofsky is not going to direct the RoboCop reboot.
No!
God damn it!
You guys all right?
I'm all right.
Yeah, I can't really say I'm surprised by this news because, you know, he was hired actually a year ago for this project, and then, you know, at the beginning of this year, he wouldn't even talk about the, you know, people were trying to interview him saying, hey, how is RoboCop going? And he basically said, I don't want to talk about it. I want to spend all my time doing the award circuits for The Wrestler, which The Wrestler had been finished for a long time at that point, so it's like, really, you're going to spend all this time just talking about how great Mickey Rourke was to work with? Like, come on, what about RoboCop? Give us something. And he wouldn't. Then and there, I figured he wasn't probably going to do this movie because they weren't saying anything about it. And now comes word that he's a movie he's getting geared up called Black Swan, also with Natalie Portman, who we just talked about a few minutes ago, is pretty much got its financing all but secured, and it looks like Fox is going to put it in theaters and distribute it, and it looks like he's off the project. They haven't said he's flat out off it, but that MGM is already looking at replacement directors, quote, just in case, which basically they're saying he's probably off the project. Any thoughts? I mean, I'm disappointed because I really thought with Aronofsky on this project, this was kind of like when Nolan got Batman and when Scorsese did The Departed. And the one that immediately came to mind was when Brian De Palma did The Untouchables, where you get this director who makes these great films, has all this great talent, and actually picks a project that is commercial and yet does fit their sensibilities and something that could work well with them that's also commercial, that could sell to an audience. I thought that Aronofsky on RoboCop. I think I speak for a lot of people when I say that was the only, his involvement was the only thing that made me interested in seeing a new RoboCop movie. Now it's pretty much gone, unless you can get another director of his caliber on board, which I don't think is going to happen. But what do you guys think?
I can go in first. I think I agree with you in that the only thing that was interesting about this project was the fact Aronofsky was wanting to do it, and he was seeking it out, which, I mean, when I first heard about this, I was completely against it. And I don't think I'm, you know, I'd rather not have anyone do it just because we want to just throw another RoboCop movie out there, because it would have been interesting what he would have thought about doing. But other than that, I didn't want this project to happen, and, you know, just leave the first one as is. I'm disregarding the other two, so.
Me too. I'm the same.
Make it worse than the third.
Well, I don't know, dude. I think the second one is worse than the third one, to be honest. And the third one's pretty terrible.
Wow.
I mean. The second one is an R-rated cartoon, and it has it's basically an R-rated cartoon / PSA for 2 hours. Kids, say no to drugs, because I am RoboCop, and I say drugs are bad. That's all it is for 2 hours. It's horrible. Yeah, and Frank Miller wrote it.
One is a joke.
You know, you're right. Ed made a very excellent point. Frank Miller wrote it. That should have been a sign from God himself that this guy should never make a movie. God was telling us 20 years prior, don't let this guy make a movie because, you know.
Now, he claims the script was screwed around with, but it features a 12-year-old gangster and all this other crazy stuff. Obviously, you know, you had the gang member whose brains got to be put into the Ed 209, and they get in this massive stop-motion fight, but yeah, you're right. It is a massive anti-drug ad.
Which, I mean, you know,
I read some.
Go ahead, Phil.
And I was going to say, he turned his vision, quotes, of RoboCop 2 into a comic series, and I caught a review or two of it, and they didn't like it at all.
I have it, and although it's an improvement, it still has huge plot holes. It's like, okay, you're writing a comic book miniseries, you can get the plot, excuse me, a little bit tighter, particularly when you're trying to sell people like this is what it would have been or could have been. It's still not that impressive. I mean, that's not saying much. Say, like, oh, well, it's better than the finished movie. And
well, personally, I was excited because, you know, I think RoboCop is, again, it's the same reason why, you know, we shouldn't be afraid of any remake. It doesn't take anything away from the original film, and the original film is very much a product of its time. It's an 80s film. It's a product of the 80s. It's a product of the Reagan era. And, you know, if Aronofsky was going to make a RoboCop for today, I'm not saying automatically that means it's going to be great just because he's doing it, but it certainly, I think, had a chance to be interesting, and I think it has a chance to be interesting and good no matter what. I would certainly rather see a RoboCop remake than a Total Recall remake. That's for damn sure, because I think there's a lot more to do with RoboCop. You don't have to make a RoboCop movie that's a media satire. I'd prefer them to make something that's completely different. Maybe today, one of the problems I had with RoboCop, I will say as a kid, obviously, it's an action movie, but the character himself isn't very agile. He walks around very, very slowly.
But he's a robot. You know,
yeah, exactly. What do you expect?
Being clunky.
Well, no, exactly. And that's one of the worst things about the second one, is that they put him on a bike and expect him to chase after vans and jump on them and shit. It's like, what the hell?
I particularly like in the second one how everyone just treats him as if it's nothing. Like, I mean, granted, like, the mentality of the characters is like, look, it's just Murphy. He's just a little different now, but it's still good old Murphy. But it's still, it's pretty laughable in the second movie to see everyone just like, hey, what's up, Murphy? What you doing? I am doing nothing. How was your weekend, Murphy? It was all right. I did nothing. It's like, what? It doesn't work that way. You can't just have him talking about random bullshit like that.
true. Yeah. It's
what did you do this weekend, right? Murphy? I got laid. What did you do? You know?
See?
Yeah.
Wait a minute. You got laid? Wait a goddamn minute.
Yeah. I think Phil's right on the money with this is a movie that's trapped in a particular time period. And it's not just the Reagan era. It's the actual, like you said, the look of the robot. Like, he's a big, slow, clunky guy. If they're going to remake this movie, I think they have to, like, reimagine the character. Like, we've had cyborgs on Battlestar Galactica and, you know, like the T-1000. Like, this movie would have to be reimagined from the ground up for me to be interested. And you might as well call it something else at that point, because the RoboCop look just doesn't work in today's movie environment. Like, he's too slow, he's too clunky, he's too bulky. It looks really old school now. Like, he'd have to be rebuilt from the ground up, and you might as well call it something else at that
point. We're all assuming, though, he's going to walk slowly. I mean, I think that's pretty much a given that one of the first things Ofranowski and David, I believe his name is David Shelf, the gentleman who was writing it with him and probably still is, that he was going to run. I think that's a safe assessment. I mean,
the bar has been raised. The latest G.I. Joe trailer with those two guys running down that street dodging missiles with those armored suits on. If RoboCop can't top that, then they might as well forget about it.
Hey, I want to finally chime in. Speaking of G.I. Joe, we finally saw a picture of Joseph Gordon-Levitt as Cobra Commander. So, did anyone else see that picture?
I did. Yeah.
Man, that is something there. Wow.
So a gentleman just told me on the Chud forum, I said that Harry Potter was the last event film of the summer. He says, no, Jamie, it's G.I. Joe. I'm not going to respond to that, but I think we all know there is no way that G.I. Joe is an event in any way other than to say...
Me.
Go ahead, Phil.
You might hate me, Jamie, but yeah. I will agree with your friend. There is no doubt in my mind, and yours as well, that it is going to flop, but that doesn't mean it's not an event film.
It's not an event film. I'm sorry.
It is.
Oh, no, it's not.
It is.
Okay.
I don't know.
Stupid, you poo-poo head.
Wow.
Transformers 2 got bad reviews, but look at the box office it got. I wouldn't write off G.I. Joe yet. I've actually heard it's not as bad as it looks.
Well, my argument isn't that it's going to be bad or it's going to be... I mean, it's just like an event film. It's a big film that's anticipated. There's only a few select event films every summer. And the last one was Potter. Like, usually they're brand name films. They're usually whatever opens the summer in the first weekend of May. That's an event film usually, because that kicks off the summer. What we're gonna get for the rest of the summer, it's gonna speak to that first movie. Wolverine was an event film. Trek was an event film. Up was an event film. There's a few others, but we didn't get that many this summer. We usually don't. I don't think G.I. Joe is one of them, because I don't think we'll be seeing a G.I. Joe 2. I think that's a safe assessment.
No, we won't.
Well, you and I obviously have a different, you know, terminology of event film. But, you know, do you know what? I'll tell you, I don't care. I'll say it right up front. I'm looking forward to it.
Oh, I am too. No. I am too. I want to see
it. It's going to be a laugh.
I want to see a train wreck. And, in fact, it's not even a train wreck. It's like it's a train wreck full of cheese. Like, I want to see this. Because with Transformers, I knew it was going to be – I mean, like, Transformers 2, I was like, I'm not wasting my time with this garbage. I saw the first one. It was horrible. This one, on the other hand, I will see, because it's like – it looks so stupid. You can't I want to see a really stupid fucking movie.
Yeah. So which you can laugh at with your friends, and some guy in the audience will say, hey, man, we're trying to watch the
– Yeah, it's like I'm trying to listen to the plot of G.I. Joe. If I hear that –
I can say is, like, I just now want to hear what Joseph Gordon-Levitt sounds like.
Oh, God.
That's the other thing I want to see.
Me too. That was the first thing I wanted to hear. Because there's an interview somewhere where he said, like, he had to work on it. And I'm like, you had to work on it? I got to hear this. You know, it's like, come on. This is the guy who some fanboys are saying should play the Joker in whatever the next Batman movie is going to be. Like, if they bring the Joker back, they should bring this guy in. Like, this is the guy. It's like, really him?
That was me at one point, but... No, he's
a
fantastic actor.
Yeah, but you're not a fanboy. That's the difference, sir.
No, that's true.
I actually know how it ends, and there is one thing which I'm so looking forward to seeing, because it is such a blatant ripoff of X-Men 1 that I am just... I can't wait to see how people react to it. I could blow it for you right now if you want.
Are we talking Statue of Liberty here?
No, something different.
Eiffel Tower.
Well, to be fair, this is not a movie about spoilers, because, I mean, you can kind of know the good guys win at the end, the bad guys don't. I mean, we know that Cobra Commander shows up near the in the third act. He's not prevalent in the first. I mean, we know that much stuff, so it's not like we're talking about Moon here.
Fuck it then. All right, guys.
They don't
If you want to say spoilers on G.I. Joe, skip ahead to a couple of minutes, folks, and I'll tell you guys what this is. Are you familiar with the character of Zartan?
Oh God, I heard about that. Ugh. Go ahead.
Oh, you heard about it.
I heard about that now.
I've heard of Zartania, but she's a magician.
No, Zartan is a member of Cobra who, on the action figure card, was described as a paranoid schizophrenic, and then they changed that. In the cartoon, he's the leader of the Dreadnoughts, who are this biker gang, but he's not that in the movie. In the movie, he's just the master of disguise, and he's played by Arnold Vosloo, who played Mummy in the Stephen Sommers Mummy movies, and so he's back.
Yes.
And he doesn't look like the character in the cartoon and the action figure. He had a hood and he had tattoos on his face and he looked kind of sinister. He just looks like Arnold Vosloo in this movie, just a bald head guy. Turns out, if I've read this right, because I browsed through the comic adaptation, I had to know. Just had to know how it ended.
That's exactly... that's how Phil found out about the Sixth Sense ending. He read the comic book adaptation beforehand.
That's right. It's true. So it turns out, in this movie, he doesn't wear... As a master of disguise, he doesn't wear Mission Impossible-style masks. No. Turns out, the Doctor, or as he will be later known, Cobra Commander, has a machine that can turn Arnold Vosloo into other people. And at the end...
Wait a goddamn minute. They did this in Die Another Day. Wait a second.
Yeah.
Jesus.
This whole movie give a bad Bond movie vibe. Didn't you guys already catch that? Like, the shot with we see warheads underwater. I immediately thought, oh, this is a 60s Bond movie. It all is.
Oh, yeah, and that's intentional. This movie, it's not as subtle as Die Another Day. I never thought I'd say that.
Wow.
It's
subtle.
No, he has an actual machine that will literally instantaneously distort. It's kind of like if you've seen Mystery Men, the machine that Greg Kinnear gets put into, but it goes wrong and distorts his face and turns it inside out. In this movie, near the end, Joseph Gordon-Levitt turns Arnold Vosloo's Zartan into the President of the United States, played by Jonathan Pryce. And at the end of the movie, literally as a cliffhanger saying G.I. Joe 2 coming soon, Zartan, disguised as the President of the United States, has taken office. Does this sound familiar to anybody who's seen X-Men 1 in
Jonathan
any way?
Pryce. He's still getting work? Wow.
Strangely.
Those Infinity ads stopped running years ago.
Something wicked this way comes.
Indeed. That pretty much says it right there, what Lou just said, actually. Really? I mean, actually, you know, the one thing I'm wondering is Brendan Fraser has a cameo in this movie. I'm wondering where that is. That's the only thing I'm curious about. That and
sings the song at the end.
No, actually, no. What happens is Brendan Fraser shows up in a little PSA at the very end of the movie. Little kids are, like, stuck in a refrigerator and, like, holy cow, it's Brendan Fraser!
Kids, burn down the kitchen, get the fuck out of here! Oh my god!
I really hope they do that in the movie. I know they won't, but like, cause I heard that they actually do the line, knowing is half the battle.
Ugh. Oh god.
Yeah, that's gonna be great. And we get to see Channing Tatum's acting debut on the big screen. I say acting
debut. Wait, he wasn't acting in Fighting?
No, he wasn't. No, I didn't see Fighting, so it's a debut for me.
One saw Fighting.
That's true. Even Channing Tatum didn't see Fighting. No, I'm sure he's a nice guy. I'm just joking. But, you know, I'm going to see G.I. Joe. I'll admit that right there. So,
Do you understand what I'm saying, though, guys? Can't you wait to see just people groan at that moment? Because it is such a blatant rip-off of Mystique turning into Senator Kelly at the end of X-Men 1. And it's like, you know, see you in 2 years. No, you fucking won't, because no one's going to see it except me and Jamie. And maybe you guys, I don't know.
No, I'm not interested.
It's going to make money there in the opening weekend. It's going to be number one. But because it comes
there's nothing else there.
Exactly.
That's right.
Unless, like, Funny People's holding power is so amazing.
Actually, there is one film. I don't know if you've heard of it. It's called Aliens in the Attic.
No.
No, I haven't heard of it.
Oh, really? Oh, well, it's about aliens in an attic.
Okay.
And it's coming out the same day as G.I. Joe in my country, anyway. Yes, yeah, a Fox movie.
Is Samuel Jackson in the movie? Is this going to be like another Snakes on a
Plane?
No,
it's just a bunch of kids.
I want these motherfucking aliens out of my motherfucking attic! Is that what it is?
Yeah, right.
I wish.
No, it's the kids film. Just search on IMDb. Just one look at the poster.
I was gonna hope Samuel Jackson would do a child's movie or something. Like
Ashley
Tisdale.
She's got a good career going.
What is she in right now?
Well, you're gonna make me look that up, right? Hang on.
No, don't worry about it.
What has she done?
I don't know. You brought it up, sir. Anyway, moving on.
She did the voice for Kim Possible.
Oh, her?
She's in High School Musicals.
Why Jamie doesn't know it, does it?
Hannah Montana movie.
No, I forgot that Lou is married with children, so like obvious and daughters no less. Of course, he would know this. There's nothing, you know, you would know this, sir. I wouldn't. See, there you go, right there.
I've just heard the name in passing, so.
Sure. Yes,
I don't have any daughters. I have a son.
I thought you said you had a daughter.
No. Just a son.
Mm. Okay, shows how good I pay attention to people.
Boy, that was a long segue from my G.I. Joe comment.
That's odd. Anyway, that's all I've got for the news this week. Do you gentlemen have anything else?
If I could do a little bit here. Last weekend I was...
No!
Okay. Go ahead. Last weekend I was at a con, and one of the panels I caught was for Nine, the Shane Acker, Tim Burton film that's coming out in September.
Yes.
And I don't know if you guys have seen the short, the 10-minute short that the movie's been based on, but it looks quite interesting. The characters are kind of like the sack boy from Little Big Planet.
Yeah.
But it's a post-apocalyptic movie, animated movie. It's got quite the voice cast. Elijah Wood, Christopher Plummer, I can't remember her name now. The girl, she was in The Hulk.
Liv Tyler?
Liv Tyler.
Liv Tyler was in the second Hulk. So.
Yeah, the first Hulk.
Jennifer Connelly.
Yeah. Not again. What's wrong with that woman? This is a big pet peeve of mine that I keep having. I saw her on Inside the Actors Studio, and she said that she wasn't particularly happy or proud of The Rocketeer. Let me tell you something, Connelly. The Rocketeer is a fucking masterpiece compared to the shit you've been doing recently.
She's talking about her personal connections on that.
True. One. Yeah, because actually that's
maybe
a good
likes Mulholland Falls a lot.
No. Actually, Lou brought up a very good point because for a while she was engaged to Billy Campbell, who was the lead in The Rocketeer. So, your personal experience might make it a little bit different. But I have to say this, Phil, if you're taking what they said Inside the Actor's Studio to heart, I don't know what to tell you, sir, because that show, I don't watch that show. The only one I ever watched was the one with the Simpsons cast, and even that wasn't that good. So.
No. I'm sorry. I'll shut up now. I'm sorry, Lou.
That's okay. Who else was it? Oh, yeah, John C. Reilly, Crispin Glover, Martin Landau. So it's got a pretty good voice cast, and it seems like it's a darker sort of tale. So it's going to be, I believe it's going to be rated PG-13. So I'm quite interested now to wait for this movie to come out in September.
And Sherlock Holmes is coming out not too. I'm looking for the second trailer came out, which is really close to the first trailer. Except for that great line delivered at the end about the key, I don't know why that's not in that trailer. But are you guys looking? I'm looking forward to Sherlock Holmes, man.
Oh yeah,
I think it's gonna be great.
I'm a little scared of the James Bond kind of vibe I'm getting from it.
Really? You getting a Bond vibe? I'm not.
Well,
wow.
All the fighting and all the stuff that he's doing—that's not Sherlock Holmes. But
true.
I'll see it though, because Downey and Jude Law together should be.
I love the accent. I must say, I was kind of worried about the accent with Downey. And like, granted, I'm not the big aficionado with British accents. That would be my co-host here, Mr. Phil G. But
yeah, I was about to say, what did Phil think of the accent?
Yeah, what did Phil think of the accent?
Well, I actually did say this when we talked about the first trailer that I do think, and I'm not judging a performance based on the trailer, but I mean, I think Robert Downey Jr. seems to be going for a Captain Sparrow kind of vibe here. It's like, I'll say funny things in a weird British accent in a weird way, and hopefully they'll be funny because everybody likes me and all the girls think I'm sexy. Yeah. But I'm fine with it. I mean, it's absolutely, hopefully it'll be great. I think it's just further proof. I agree with Lou. It's not so much a Bond vibe. It's just, it's further proof of what an influential movie Batman Begins has been, because Yeah. This is just another movie in that vein. Anyone who wants to start up a franchise again in an action-adventure sort of way, Batman Begins is the template they use, and that's what this movie's going to be. So for that reason, if not any other, I'm excited about it.
Yeah, that's actually a good point. And again, people have the most revisionist history. Begins made a lot of money. It was a blockbuster. It made $200 million, but it fell below a lot of projections, and there was a point where they weren't even going to do a Batman Begins sequel. So people kind of forget that. I don't know how, but they kind of either forget that or they just purposely choose to ignore it. But it's so funny now the way people write that movie, because I remember that entire summer when it opened, it was not a killer moneymaker in the opening weekend. In fact, people were worried, like, oh my God, this great Batman movie's out, the franchise it's healthy again, and no one's seeing it. Of course, that turned out not to be the case, but that was the initial fear when the numbers came in originally that opening weekend. I don't know if you guys remember that or not.
No, I never
thought
that at all.
You think...
I thought it made, you know, it was making its money, and I don't know, people were thinking it didn't have any named villains, and it still made a lot of money. I know it had momentum for it.
Yeah.
It had to fight the stigma of the previous Batman franchise.
And, of course, the Dark Knight, you know, and that, of course, you know, we'll see what happens with Batman 3 whenever the hell they make it. But anyway.
Yeah. If it does happen.
Not even a question, my good friend. It'll happen. It's just a question of, Bale's going to do it, because it's not like, yeah, I mean, he'll be doing other movies, but hey, Terminator 5 ain't happening, and he's going to make a lot of money for a third Batman movie. He signed on anyway. He'll do it. Nolan? I don't know. We'll see.
Mm-hmm. But you think Sherlock Holmes is going to make a lot of money,
yes.
Don't you, James?
Oh, I think Sherlock Holmes is going to make more money worldwide than Iron Man did. Iron Man did just under $600 million. I think Sherlock Holmes is going to do around... I do, because it's a character this seems like the kind of movie, as our friend Lou said, the Bond vibe. Bond films do huge in the international markets. I mean, I'm 25, I could live the rest of my life in gravy with that kind of money. that much they usually make.
Yeah.
And this one I think is going to make a fortune.
I mean, right now the movie is set for December 25th.
Yes.
There's nothing else unless you want to see Alvin and Chipmunk's sequel.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, there's nothing else.
Or that or Avatar for the 18th time.
I'm definitely interested in seeing the Sherlock Holmes movie. I'm just a little worried that they're changing the character. From that trailer, he seems to be quite the womanizing, very physical kind of character, much different than the historical kind of Bond. But maybe they're reinventing it for a new audience. So.
The funny thing is, in the books... Holmes, at least from what I had heard, was always a physical guy. He was never just he had a massive coke addiction, but he was never just the way he was depicted in the old movies and whatnot. So,
we'll see. Well, he had a morphine addiction when he was bored, but he wasn't very physical. He was very
no, he was.
Yeah. So, yeah. I mean,
but then he was like beating up Moriarty on a waterfall. So,
yes.
Yeah.
Where he died, really, you know.
And then came back in The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
Unfortunately, yes.
Yes. But anyway.
Can I just say, Jamie, if you don't want us thinking about you in leather gear, what on earth makes think we want to think about you in gravy? Because personally, I'm going to have a hard time.
You didn't specify what kind of gravy.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, you know what? Hey, you know what, goddammit? Gravy is delicious. Leather isn't.
Well, yeah, but I now I've got an image of you in a bath of gravy, and it's going with me.
You know what I look like. Sir, you don't even know what I look like. I could look like Robert.
No, I have a picture, though. I have a picture.
You have a picture? What the hell? I took it when you weren't looking.
I don't know, No. Hang on, no, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll just type in man from Louisiana into Google, and then I'll pick that as your mental image, because you all look the same, I'm sure.
Ooh, how racist that was.
Yeah, I know. I was just getting your back rolled.
Wow.
My country.
And now with that, we wrap up this week's movie moan. Damn.
Sorry. I'm sorry.
Not at all, sir. I guess that's all we have this week. Mr. Liu, thank you for joining us, sir.
Oh, always a pleasure.
You have to join us again, man. I mean, it's been too long, man. For real.
Right.
Thank you very much.
As always. Phil, you want to wrap it up? Ed, you guys want to wrap it up? Go ahead.
You guys take it. I'm done.
I'll go ahead. I could definitely say we're into the doldrums of the summer. I could definitely see on what's on tap. There really isn't anything, at least in July. I don't think there'll be anything worth mentioning until District 9 and The Goods come out. Other than that, we have now reached what is known as the dead zone of film for the rest of the summer. So unless anyone wants to see Aliens in the Attic and maybe Funny People, I don't know what else to do. So.
You're not looking forward to Funny People?
God.
I'm on the fence. I'm not sure about it, you know?
Fair enough. I'm going off reputation. You know, the reputation of that director, and that's selling it for me. And I like the trailer, so. Anyway. Folks, thanks for listening. We'll see you next week at the movies. Bye, guys.
See ya. Bye.
Ta-ta.